The Psi Combinator. It's on in Haskell. We love it. You got a unary operation. You got a binary operation. And two arguments in common, you apply that unary operation to both arguments and then feed it to the binary operation. It's super useful if you're doing chunk bys in Haskell. That's called group or group by.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 146, recorded on June 21st, 2023. My name is Connor, and today with my co-host Bryce, we continue to record live from Italy on the way to Venice during our Slovenia 2023 road trip. In today's episode, we chat about improvements to our parallel std unique implementation, essential data structures, our favorite algorithms revisited, and BQN superpowers.
All right. Well, so what am I telling the listener /you?
Your idea for a implementation of unique that does not need temporary storage.
Right. So we'll do this with a practical example. Say we have 100 numbers. Yeah. You're going to chunk this up into 10 chunks of 10. On each of these 10 chunks, you're now going to call a sequential unique. You don't need this one to be in parallel. The parallelness is the fact that we're doing this 10 different times on 10 different chunks. You call unique on each of these chunks. Then once you've done that, you're going to merge them, which Bryce asked, well, what does that mean? You're basically just going to be copying, and you could calculate the indices first if you wanted to perform all the copies in parallel, or you could just do them one after another sequentially, where basically, because you've called unique on each of these chunks, you basically have potentially removed some values, so you need to shift them all over. So the copying is just, you know, copy the first chunk, copy the second chunk over to where the first chunk ends, etc. And then once you've done this, you still need to perform one final unique, which is going to potentially be expensive. Yeah, so it doesn't even work. Like, that's the thing. Yes, this avoids the avoids the linear memory storage, but like, imagine that all your values are unique. So like, the final unique that you're calling has to be, because it can't be the parallel one, right? Because you could, yeah, like.
Well, but why do you have to do that final unique?
Because if you say, in my example of 100 values, say value number 10 is 42 and value number 11 is also 42. Because those each got sent to a different chunk, there's no looking back at the equal value. And so when you copy them back, you're going to end up with those two 42s still adjacent to each other.
But all that, in that case where you got two chunks and the first chunk has its last value is 42 and the second chunk its first value is 42, all that second chunk all that it needs to know is what was the last value of that first chunk. This is a very similar property to what chunks need to know when you do a scan. And so if you can just you could use the same downsweep upsweep technique that you use for a scan, where you have every chunk do its serial unique and then write to some O chunks array of temporary storage what its last value was, and then you have another parallel pass where each chunk looks at the array and says, hey, what was the last value of the chunk before me, and then it can do the fix up that it needs to, that if that last element was the same as the first element. That may not work in the face of if I have I think it's fine. Even if I had like chunk one that ended it with a 42, chunk two is all 42s, and chunk three starts with a 42. In that case, chunk one is going to write.
It'll work. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll still work. So that I think is a workable design.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, a lot. It's a little bit trickier though, because now you're basically, you have like overlapping tiles or chunks.
Yeah, but you have that with a scan too.
Yeah, but a scan is designed to work that way. Yeah, so yes. The answer is yes. You can avoid your final unique by making use of the last value from each chunk in the next chunk.
And I suspect that we've just talked about that using the design of the simpler two-pass scan, but I suspect that you could implement that algorithm with the same technique that we use for the single-pass decoupled look-back scan and get yourself to at least a single-pass unique that only needs O number of chunks temporary storage instead of ON temporary storage. So yeah, I think that's better. So you're gonna go implement that and send me a PR for Thrust?
No,
I'm busy.
All right. Now that we've bottomed out on that, we can do a proper final episode.
All right, what are we chatting about now?
I don't know. You got any topics?
We could circle back 140 something episodes, depending on when this comes out, and talk about our favorite algorithms now that it's been 2.5 years later. You know,
is our favorite algorithm still the same?
Well, what were our answers then?
Mine was out of product. I don't know if you remember. I think yours was transform reduce.
Yeah.
Although you might have chosen something different because you always say transform reduce.
I think today I would simply say reduce because I think that transform reduce is just is no special thing. It's just a form of reduce, a spelling of reduce, but perhaps I would say scan because I think increasingly on these most recent episodes we've found scans I do know what my answer is going to be. My answer is going to be that non-commutative reduce, the reduce that does not require your operator to be commutative. And the reason that I like that one so much is that it does a reduction, but it lets you propagate information from left to right, and that can be very, very powerful. So I think that's the reduce that I would pick. And yes, you may pay some performance penalty for using that reduce instead of the commutative reduce. But I still think that's the... If I only had one algorithm tool, I would have that one.
Lovely. We love that for you. Great algorithm.
Why don't we talk more about data structures on this podcast?
Yeah, because they're boring.
Yeah, that's an inflammatory statement, but, you know, there's that famous quote, but it's something like, you know, 100 functions versus one data structure, or 10 functions that work on 10 data structures. Whereas in C++, we have technically 100 functions that work on 10 data structures. But I just, like, I these days, I operate in array land, and there's really only one data structure, and that's the array, the multidimensional array. You know what? Sometimes you need a hash table, but we got those too. KUKO, check it out, link in the description. Parallelized data structures, if you need a hash map on the GPU. You know, sometimes you need stacks and queues, but, like, you can implement all those with an array. It's just a couple extra functions. And, yeah, you know, I'm just, I understand that there are certain areas that require, certain domains that require fancy, you know, probabilistic, what do they call it? Hyperlog and stuff like that. Very interesting stuff. It's just not, it's not what I'm focused on right now. And there's nothing really, I find it less tantalizing for my brain to think about data structures versus it's much more tantalizing to think about algorithms and chunk buys and the missing algorithms and stuff like that. You know, we love chunk buy, we love outer product, we love zip transform, we love inner product or transform reduce, we love the segmented algorithms, we love them all, folks, we love them all. Well, and
I would also posit that I would posit that data structures are algorithms, and when you think about, like, what a data structure is, it's like, you know, it's some state and maybe some set of invariants and then, like, operations on that state, and when we talk about algorithms here, like especially when we talk about like, you know, reductions or scans, like we often talk about like what is the state that we need to propagate? What is the information that we need to propagate between, you know, like with our reduction or scan operators? And you know, sometimes when we talk about algorithms, like we talked about unique and how our parallel implementation thrust currently needs to maintain this ON temporary storage, like that's, you know, that's state two. And so, you know, I think that at the end of the day, data structures are really just persistent algorithms, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, that's a stretch. That's a stretch. But I see what you're trying to say. And I remember back when I was an actuary trying to get a job at a major tech company, and I was doing all these LeetCode challenges and reading, you know, cracking the code, CTCI, whatever it's called, cracking the code interview, and you're reading all these blogs on how to best prepare. And, like, there was this, geez, Louise, we've got Mr. Mazda riding right up on me tail. We're going to have to get into our right-hand lane here. And I just remember there was this, like, big onotation.com that had sort of all these different data structures that had the time complexity of all the operations that came with these data structures. And I just think that's so silly. Like, you know what, folks? You know what, folks? You're hearing it here first. Here's what you need to know. You need to know your list in Python. We're going to stick with Python, you know? You need to know your list in Python, aka your vector, something that's dynamically resizable, you can append to, etc. You need to know that. That's your bread and butter. Everyone's rank one array, your vector, whatever you want to call it. And after that, you know, you really don't need much. You need a hash set. You need a hash map. Maybe you need some ordered collections. You know, in Python, you're going to have to import your, I believe it's called the sorted collections module. In C++, it's going to be your map and your set, which is very confusing because, you know, we should have called them ordered map and ordered set, and then set and map should have been our hash containers. But you know what? Naming's hard. And I really honestly think that's it. You know, that's, I think once you've got your hash set, your hash map, and your vector, or your list, whatever you're going to call it. So every once in a while, you need something that's sorted, but a lot of times, you don't actually need that sorted container. You just need a rank one array, you know, vector or list, and then you can just sort that, and you're good to go. And, you know, all these stacks and decks and queues, and yeah, okay, it's good to know them, but, like, are you actually reaching for that stuff? And I know there's a few listeners being like, I used a queue this one time, I used a stack this one time. But, like, I think 95% of problems and stuff are solved with just, you know, a couple hash containers. We're going this way because we got to pay.
Yes, that's right.
And we're going to...
Ooh, hopefully they take card. I mean, that does seem to be an image of a credit card, right?
It did just say Visa, so we're good to go. We're going to have to talk to someone. Do you think they want to be on the pod?
I think we better not get in trouble with European privacy laws.
All right, here, folks, we're doing it live. And the car is unhappy because it thinks we're going to crash.
I guess we don't have to talk to somebody.
Are we recording still?
I did stop the recording when I thought that this was going to be an incident. We managed to successfully pay the toll on the Italian highway. It's very confusing because we put the ticket in before we selected the language, and so all the instructions were in Italian, and it was not clear where to put the credit card in at all. Apparently, you put it in the same place as the ticket.
Would have been nice if they had a little arrow pointing. Yeah. They just had Visa signs everywhere. And looking for a tap, and didn't think that there would be a overloading of functions for that little ticket slot.
Yes. Where were we before we were so rudely interrupted by the highway?
We were talking about data structures. Oh, right, and I was just saying, you got your list in Python, your set, your map, and they don't even have sets. Oh, no, that's true. They do have sets in Python. There's some language that doesn't have sets. And they if you want a set, you just use a valueless hash map, which I don't like at all.
Anyways.
That sort of seems fine to me. It seems like a simpler model, because then you don't have these two kinds of things. Like just to make a set a special case of a map, then it's one less thing you have to learn and worry about. And then, like, all of your code that's been written to deal with maps will also work with sets. That kind of actually seems like a good design to me.
I think you're completely wrong. If you've got no sets and only a hash map, that means you've got a bunch of APIs that are for looking up, you know, values and stuff like that, that just have no meaning because there's no values there. And it's the same reason that, you know, you've got the aliases, keys and values on the C++ 20 range adapter elements. They, you know, they're sure it's convenient, but it can be confusing. So we don't like it.
Sure, that may be fair. Anyways, I guess that's why we don't like talking about data structures that much. I think it also may be a domain thing. It may be just that because we're in compute and that we mostly focus on the design of parallel algorithms, we just spend less time thinking about data structures, and maybe people in different domains or working in different types of applications spend more time thinking about it.
Yep. How far? We're 19 minutes away from Venice, folks.
9 kilometers until the part where I'm going to want to pay attention to looking at Venice and not talking to the listener.
Wow. So rude, Bryce. I want to keep talking to the listener, folks.
I could have been ruder. I could have said, I want to pay attention to looking at Venice and not talking to you.
That's, you know, I think it was more offensive when you insulted the listener, not me. I'm used to it after 4 days of traveling with Bryce. So, we're now going to talk about the things, the superpowers, the hidden gems of array languages. Specifically, we're going to focus on BQN, but a lot of the array languages, J and APL, have these features too. So, the first one is invertible functions. Invertible functions. Think about this, folks. Think about this. Say one of my favorite functions that I actually, or algorithms that I didn't mention, that I think I was going to mention when I brought up talking about our favorite algorithms, was an algorithm called indices. Sometimes it's called where. In Q, it's called where. And in APL, I believe it's called where. But in J and BQN, I believe it's called indices. And this is if you're given a Boolean list, a list of ones and zeros, aka trues and falses, it returns you the indices corresponding to the trues. So given the sequence 10101, you get back the values 1, 3, and 5. Or if you're in BQN, you get back the values 0, 2, and 4, depending on whether you're a one index language or a zero index. I prefer one indexed array languages, I prefer that language choice. Doesn't mean I prefer languages that do that. Anyways, and so that function, we'll call it indices. You spell it differently in each of the languages, but we'll refer to it colloquially as indices. But what if you go indices inverse, which is just a little equal sign in the top right-hand corner, a superscript equal sign in BQN, and it's power to the negative 1 in... Or it's like it's the power, which is a star, diuresis, negative 1 in APL. If you do indices inverse and you give it the sequence 135, it'll give you back a Boolean mask, 10101. Isn't that amazing?
That is pretty cool. Are all functions invertible?
Not all functions, but a lot of functions. So many functions.
What determines whether or not a function is invertible?
Whether it is implemented. And
that is a bad answer.
Well, I mean, so in J, they actually have a conjunction, I believe, called obverse, where you can actually implement your inverse of a function. So you can actually do that. And I think just like most of the functions have it, so, you know, plus, minus, multiplies, divides, etc., stuff like that. But, yeah. You know, if it's there, it's there. And it's friggin' awesome. It's friggin' awesome. What language can you do that in? What language? The answer is array languages, folks. You can't do it in any other language.
So, but I want to go back to my question. Like, what property makes a function invertible? Surely not all functions are invertible. And I think that this is a sort of a mathematical question. Although I vaguely recall discussing functions and their invertibility in my college years, but I don't remember any of the details.
Yeah, I mean, it's sure. It's, I mean, there's mathematical stuff behind this, you know. It's fine. We don't need to chat about that. The point is that there are invertible functions, which, speaking of mathematical, brings us to the second awesome thing. This is no particular order, folks.
Although I think we're getting pretty close to where we're going to
do this. Listen, we're going to continue to chat, ladies and gents, until we see something that's really beautiful, which we're not there yet. So the second thing is under, structural under. This is similar to the invertibility of functions. So say you want to do a reverse scan, a write scan in an array language like BQN. In APL, you will actually have to sort of just reverse your list, then perform the scan, then reverse it again. J actually has a primitive that enables you to do it whatever direction you want. But in BQN, they've got under, which is one circle with another circle around it for the symbol. And if you want to do a reverse scan, you just go scan under reverse, which basically means it will apply a function, then perform the operation, and then perform the inverse operation of that function, which for reverse is just reverse. So that's brilliant. It's so brilliant because there's so many times. How many times have you been doing something where you basically, like another example is when you are dealing with characters, but you want to do some operation on like the Unicode values. So you can convert it to like an integer, do some kind of math, and then convert it back to a character with, you know, probably some modulus to make sure it's still in the right range. It's fantastic. But you can do that with under. You can convert it to, I'm going here, making a couple,
I think so.
couple lane changes here, folks. Venezia, that's Italian for Venice. And anyways, under is great. Inverse is great. And what else is great? I mean, combinators. Combinators are fantastic. We've already talked about combinators. Go check it out, though. Check out the B1 combinator. Check out the B combinator. Check out the Phi combinator. Check out the Psi combinator, folks. The Psi combinator. It's on in Haskell. We love it. You got a unary operation. You got a binary operation. And two arguments incoming, you apply that unary operation to both arguments and then feed it to the binary operation. It's super useful if you're doing chunk bys in Haskell. That's called group or group by. And like, imagine you want to group by some property of the list of things. So for instance, if you want to create chunks of contiguous odd elements and contiguous even elements, but you're given a list of integers, well, what you want to chunk on is the value of applying odd or even to each of your integers in your list. So because chunk by or group by, though, takes a binary predicate, odd is a unary predicate. So what you want to do is you want to do equal is your binary operation, and then odd or even as your unary operation. So it's the Psi combinator with equality and an odd or even function. We love it. We love it, folks. The Psi combinator, check it out. The D2 combinator you can use by using both the, I believe it's the sigma and delta combinators all at the same time. We love it, folks. Check out BQN for combinators, for inverse, for under, and for rank polymorphism as well. I think we need to go straight.
I think we're going to sign off here for now. Yeah, we do need to go straight. Yeah.
All right. We're in Venice, folks.
We're about to get on the bridge. We will be in Venice very soon.
We love it.
Be sure to check the show notes either in your podcast app or at adspthepodcast.com for links to any of the things we mentioned in today's episode, as well as a GitHub discussion where you can leave questions, comments, or thoughts. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
Low quality, high quantity. That is the tagline of our podcast.
It's not the tagline. Our tagline is chaos with sprinkles of information.